Good morning. First case of the morning will be United States v. Kukhu Lim. Ms. Joseph?
May it please the court, my name is Nancy Joseph and I represent Mr. Kukhu Lim. A defendant who's mounting a sufficiency of the evidence argument or challenge has a Herculean task, to say the least. Mr. Lim recognizes this Herculean task that he has ahead of him, but feels that he must forge forward nonetheless, because in his case, there was not sufficient evidence to prove beyond reasonable doubt the specific intent required for a violation of 18 U.S.C. 1344. Mr. Lim admitted making the numerous deposits at issue in this case and the numerous withdrawals during that 10-day period. What he disputed at trial was, in a way very narrow, was did the government prove his intent, that he had the criminal intent to defraud the bank. The charge was that he artificially inflated the account and made numerous withdrawals before basically the bank could find out what he was up to, before the bank could find out there was not sufficient funds. This charge required proof that he knew there was insufficient funds within the account, yet he made the withdrawals anyway.
Why wasn't the evidence that one of the accounts had been closed for 5 years and the other only had some $12,000 or $15,000 in it more than enough, at a minimum, circumstantial evidence for the government that the trier of fact, in this case the judge, was entitled to believe?
The evidence regarding the account having been closed for more than 5 years, the May 1995 letter that you make reference to that was found in his home, that was the importance of that piece of evidence was that it was from May 1995. There was not evidence contemporaneous to the deposits and withdrawal to show that the accounts were closed or what balances were in the account.
So why does the government, once it shows the account has been closed, have to come forward and also show that it was never reopened, if you will? If you've closed an account, you've closed it. And since, as you point out, we are talking about sufficiency of the evidence, this is evidence that there was nothing in the account. Right? In the absence of anything else, we don't go around assuming the closed accounts suddenly have millions of dollars in them.
Well, Your Honor, because the evidence of the closed account was 5 years earlier, and because Mr. Lim deposited checks from that account four years later in 1999, the government did not show that in the interim that there were account was not reopened, or that there were other deposits made in that account. And the government also failed to show, Your Honor, that the checks had, for example, been returned for lack of funding, that the checks were in essence bad. And there is the lack of sufficiency of the evidence to prove that he knew that these checks were not good, that these checks were not to be honored. There was no evidence coming from Singapore to show that the checks were bad at all. That was not presented at this trial. In addition to no evidence showing that the checks were returned for being bad or insufficient, there were no bank statements presented to show during that period of time, September 1999, what the balances were during that period of time.
But this was a case of circumstantial evidence. The government concedes that in its brief, and you certainly would agree that circumstantial evidence can be used by the government. In fact, with international banking, and particularly countries like Singapore, it's not the easiest thing in the world to get internal banking statements. And so that's probably what led the government to present a circumstantial case. But for whatever reason, it really doesn't matter. As long as there's circumstantial evidence, it's enough.
Well, it may be true about the Singapore law, Your Honor, but it still does not alleviate the government's burden in this case, which is not just to piece together a bunch of circumstantial evidence while that is allowed, but the evidence must be good enough to pass the beyond a reasonable doubt muster, and Mr. Lim contend that that was not done here. We already touched upon the evidence that was that the government attempted to use, the 1995 letters and 1998 letters also that were found in Mr. Lim's closet. But as I already mentioned before, those pieces of evidence, while maybe probative, were not relevant in that they were not timely as to what was going on during that period of September 1999 on those accounts. The additional evidence that was shown at trial also, Mr. Lim's statement, his statement was consistent with his defense, basically. Yes, I made these deposits. Yes, I made these withdrawals. But what I was trying to do here was shifting the risk. I had no way of knowing for sure that these were lacking in funds. Now,
but, you know, that almost fails the straight face test. You know, if you have a closed account and you write a check on it, you may not have known whether the bank is going to honor it or not, but at some point he's so reckless. I suppose I could find a checkbook and write a check on it and present it to a bank, and I might not know if there was any money in the account or not. But he knows that the account was closed, and he writes the check, and he gives this risk-shifting argument. It's not like, you know, your college-age son who may spend money a little too quickly and can't remember if there's a zero balance yet or not. This is a very different circumstance.
Yeah, I think the analogy that you make is very similar to the analogy that the district court made in that I think he said something to the effect that if my court reporter, we're out to lunch, my court reporter gives me a check to cover the lunch, well, I have no way of knowing whether that check is good, whether the court reporter has in fact made the deposit to cover that check. And I think that analogy is probative here in that Mr. Lim deposited those checks, but like the court reporter, the government did not prove that he had knowledge that the checks were insufficient, that there was nothing basically to back up those checks.
What was the largest check you wrote?
Right, off the top of my head, I do not know, Your Honor, but I think there were checks in the approximately 500,000 was the largest check, but that figure is just...
$500,000?
Yes, that figure is just...
And millions of dollars in transactions totaled, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. And to that, he admitted what's disputed is what his intent was. I see that the white light is on in my rebuttal time.
Okay, fine. Mr. Wilson?
Good morning, Your Honors. Eric Wilson on behalf of the United States. The evidence, Your Honors, in this case was overwhelming. Respectfully, the bank activity in itself, as Judge Kennelly elaborated about during his detailed findings that he made, his factual findings that he made in entering a guilty verdict in this case, if one just looks at the banking activity itself and nothing else, that in itself is strong, powerful, circumstantial evidence of guilt. It is not normal, innocent banking activity.
Just a matter of curiosity, is there any indication why the bank honored those checks immediately?
Yes, there is evidence in the record of that. That, too, baffled the district court that the bank allowed that to happen. There was a policy in place at the bank at the time where certain foreign currencies were given immediate credit, no matter how much money was in the account into which the person was depositing that check, so that, for example, in this case, the opening balance in these accounts, one had a negative balance, and I think the balance in the other account was about $4. But he was depositing checks drawn on Singapore dollars of hundreds of thousands of dollars. But the bank, because they had this policy, gave him immediate credit. Because of this case, not surprisingly, the bank
But my question was, do you know why they were doing that? Is there anything?
I can't speak for the bank. I believe the testimony at trial was that it was an oversight. That it was there was no rational explanation for the underpinning the policy.
Did the bank ultimately lose any money on this?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
I mean, not in the millions, I presume.
No. The FBI was able to recover the great majority of the funds, either because they were deposited at other institutions here in the area, or they recovered, and this again is in the record, but they recovered some cash.
Certified checks as well.
Correct. But the bank ultimately lost somewhere it was in the six-figure range that was never recovered. But in any event, Your Honors, if you do look at the banking activity, and the government supplemented the record with the chart that it prepared of this banking activity, that in itself is strong circumstantial evidence. And if you couple that with the statement the defendant made after his arrest, several of which just defy logic, if you couple that with the evidence that the government introduced at that issue on this appeal of what the defendant did with these funds after he withdrew them, that itself is not normal innocent banking activity. It's probative of his consciousness of guilt.
You also had evidence, did you not, that he had had conversations with a Citibank employee about this Singapore dollar loophole?
Yes. There was two employees, actually. One who testified that in December of 1998, that employee informed Mr. Lim that he would have immediate access to funds deposited in Singapore dollars. He then goes to Singapore, comes back, and basically instantly starts depositing and withdrawing these checks. Then there was a testimony of a woman by the name of Fong Fong Zhang, who Mr. Lim, by all accounts, tried to enlist her assistance during the scheme. He asked her questions like, how can I get my money out of the bank in a hurry, things like that, without security noticing, statements that are strongly indicative of his guilty intent. And Your Honor is correct in that the government was hamstrung by Singapore banking laws in the evidence that it was able to get from Singapore. What it did introduce was evidence that the bank account had been closed, evidence that with regard to the other account that it had a paltry balance in it at the time of the scheme. And that, in conjunction with the other evidence, Your Honors, the government respectfully believes is overwhelming evidence of the defendant's guilt, and for that reason we would respectfully request that the court affirm the conviction and sentence.
What was the sentence in this case?
I believe, Your Honor, it was on the order of 57 months, but
I don't need to know exactly that's fine.
It's attached to the appellant's brief.
Mr. Lim, a U.S. citizen?
He is not, Your Honor.
So after this, will he be in trouble with the new Bureau of whatever it is, citizenship, et cetera?
It's safe to say that the INS will be interested in him.
Or its successor agency.
After the Bureau of Prisons, correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Joseph?
Your Honor, to say that the pattern of deposits and withdrawal made by Mr. Lim were not suspicious would not pass the straight face test. I think the government proved suspicious activity. What's being contested here is that the government had the burden of proving the case beyond a reasonable doubt, and what they prove at trial, while may be suspicious, did not pass that higher standard.
Okay, thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement.